Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. I think about it every night and day. Spread my wings and fly away.
Welcome to the Jillian Michaels Show.
God, you crack me up.
Janice is still here.
I'm just waiting for something. Just a bone. Throw me a bone.
You're still here.
I know I'm still here. How are you?
Oh, I'm good.
Very good.
I am good, actually. Doing a lot of traveling these days.
Yeah, you're never. I talk to some of your people. You know, every once in a while I talk to your people. And then, Jillian's not here. She's not here. She's away.
Oh, my gosh. I have been all over the friggin' place for the last couple of months. And it's like, New York 2 times, Vegas 2 times, Indianapolis, North Carolina, Utah, the Middle East. I mean, I've been all over the place. And I love to travel. I'm a big traveler. But I have to say that there is no place like home. really isn't. There is no place like your own bed, your little sanctuary, your world set up the way that you want it. With, you know, maybe you have a host of creatures living in your house like I do. And I really appreciate how restorative home can be. And, you know, sometimes they say, oh, you need a vacation from your vacation. And a lot of that, frankly, was a lot of that travel was work related. Some of it was holiday based, but most of it was work related. Regardless, though, I find no matter how much I enjoy adventures that are personal or professional, it's kind of exhausting. Or even just going out, you don't even have to be traveling. Even just going out into the world can be such an excursion. I swear, just getting onto the 405 freeway here in California is an adventure in itself. I liken it to rafting the Zambezi. It is that treacherous at times and that exhausting. But I wanted to talk about ways of making your home a restorative sanctuary, because I think it's so incredibly important to have that safe, happy place where you can recharge. And it doesn't need to be palace. It doesn't matter if you're living out of a studio apartment. I mean, for years I lived in a studio apartment and I still managed to make my home, my sanctuary, my happy place, so that when I shut that door behind me, I was able to leave 95% of whatever was on my mind at the door. You know, it gets to the point where worrying, stressing, anxiety, they really don't serve a purpose. If you can be proactive and work on a solution, fantastic. That's great. But when you're laying in bed or things in the house are triggering you to stress or you're pacing or you're stress eating or whatever it might be, that is just not good. You need a place that is really going to allow you to unplug and to nurture yourself. Because one of the best ways to combat stress is to simultaneously match it with nurturing. So when you're going through a hard time, put positive things back in. So it could just be a manicure pedicure. It could just be lighting candles. It could be, a hobby that you love to do. You know, who knows what it might be. But spend time really pampering yourself and nurturing yourself that are not self-destructive, again, like a binge or whatever it might be when you're stressed out. So I wanted to talk about a few things that you should be mindful of or could do to really make your house that safe place. And one of them is do your best to just tidy up. I find that when my house is in chaos,
cluttered,
I feel like I'm in chaos. And it could be as simple as dishes that are everywhere around the house. As simple as me walking through the door and scattering my things all over the place, like whether it's my keys, my bag, my phone, my computer, the book, my papers, my whatever projects I need to go over, scattering them. It's like one goes on the doorway here, one gets on the kitchen table, one goes on the bedside table. It's just, it looks like clutter. It looks like scatter. It makes me feel discombobulated. It takes me a long time to find my things when I do that. It makes me, where are my keys? Where are my sunglasses? Where's my wallet? Like, that is not a good feeling. In addition, it's a time waster. And my bed's a mess, quite honestly. If I don't at least throw the comforter and straighten out my bed, I'm not asking for hospital corners. But you know what I mean? Like, and a lot of those feng shui guru people will tell you that your bed really reflects the state of your mind. If you're leaving it kind of a mess and what have you. And I live at the beach, and sometimes the house, it gets sand and the dogs track sand in the house. And I really do your best to keep it straightened up because it allows you to feel more calm. You know where things are. Everything's in its place. It's tidy. And when your physical surroundings are tidy, it helps you tidy up your thoughts. It helps bring less chaos to your thought process, to your emotional well-being. So in that moment, if you use a dish, if you use a cup, put it away. Straighten things up. Keep it tidy. Have a place when you walk in the door where you can, a landing strip, so to speak, where you can set down your things, your keys, your glasses, your computer, your bag, so you know where they are, so they're not strewn all over the place. It really does make a big difference, and it only requires a small amount of effort, because the last thing you want to be doing or feeling is like your home is chaos, or like you want to get out, or you want to escape it. Which brings me to another aspect of decluttering. Remove things in the house that have negative energy. I mean, I've held on to things, gifts from people that I had a falling out with, or
that kind of stuff.
Photos from unhappy times, you know, or I was heavy, or I was going through a tough phase, or, you know, medicines from sicknesses.
So you don't feel the negative things are for motivation to do a positive thing?
I don't. I find that they bring me down. I don't like negative reinforcement to get me towards a goal. I don't put a picture of my big, this is why I don't have many fat pictures from my youth. I have like three because I quite honestly threw most of them out. The ones that have circulated around the internet and on the talk show circuit for years upon years, I had to dig out of my mother's garage 7 years ago when no one believed I had a weight problem. So because quite honestly, I dumped them all. And I don't find that looking at that doesn't make me go, ooh, you know, really want to get lean. Like, I much prefer to look at an aspirational photo of somebody I admire, whether it used to be, you know, when I was a kid, it was Madonna or Linda Hamilton from Terminator. Like, yeah. I want to look at things that are aspirational, things that make me go, ooh, I want that. I want to be that. I want to do that. That make me feel like excited about getting in shape or positive about getting in shape, not that bring me down. And even when they do studies on things like cigarettes, for example, and they put on their smoking kills, it doesn't work. It does not work. People just they numb out, they ignore it, and they buy their $11 pack of cigarette and continue puffing away. What does work is positive reinforcement. So, you know, there are companies that offer benefits to employees that work out. There are insurance companies that offer, you know, discounts for people that have their cholesterol in a certain range, this, that, the other. Positive reinforcement, incentivizing people, or yourself in this particular instance, has a much more powerful effect. So I'm going to say, get rid of that crap. Get rid of that stuff. You don't need it. Either recycle it and let somebody else in the world assign a new energy into
it. I can give somebody else my old pain. Here, take it.
No, they might not, but it might not even be painful for that. You know what I mean? It's like, I just think, you know, if somebody gave me a piece of jewelry and it's not wildly expensive, I give it away. I'm like, I don't need this. I don't want this, or whatever it might be. I let it go. I let it go and I move on. I release it. And I make a real effort to surround my environment with things that are aspirational, that remind me of times when I was strong, when I was powerful, or ways that I want to be, things I want to do, hence a vision board, for example.
I've never heard of that, a vision board.
Come on.
No, seriously.
What?
I don't know what a vision board is.
You are kidding. You're being this old.
I'm being honest. I know put Post-its on the mirror and Post-its on the fridge of empowering things.
Oh, but you're not. You haven't been watching your Oprah. That's for sure.
Oh, am I just being a dummy? Do other people know this?
Yes. Oh, you're clearly not reading my books either.
No, I have.
A vision board is where you essentially take a cork board and you put on photos, images, slogans of things that you want, things that inspire you, things you hope to achieve one day. And it could be anything. It could be something as silly as a car that you want to own, or a picture of a baby. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Because you can see I'm still waiting on this adoption situation.
No, I got it. Okay, I got you.
But anyway, so surround yourself with things that are positive. Clear out the clutter. Let go of, it could be old clothes, it could be anything, but like really make some space for new things to come in. Surround yourself with positive influences and remove anything that's going to trigger you in a negative way. Let it go. Move on. Another thing is, in particular, your kitchen, the kitchen in the house, especially if you're dealing with health issues. Every single time I would go to a family's home when I was shooting Losing It, I can't tell you the kitchen. I mean, it was like the refrigerator had old soda stick smudging all over the place and rotting fruits and vegetables in a back drawer and condiments that had like overflowed onto the shelf and, you know, boxes of cereal that were left open and all kinds of crap. Keep your kitchen tidy. Keep your refrigerator clean. I think the kitchen has a real reflection on your health and how you think of it. You know, I organize my little supplements on this drawer. The dogs have their little doggy supplements over here. Right. You know, I keep my refrigerator clean and I keep my food fresh and organized where I can see everything. And really, don't allow your kitchen to go to pot, because it's a big reflection on how you treat your body. Just like the bedroom has a reflection of your thoughts, keep the kitchen clean and tidy. And don't allow crap foods or garbage to come in there for any extended period of time. You know, it's one thing if you bring home a little bit of leftover, but it's another thing if you've got bags of chips, you know, the boxes of cookies and things like that. Really control the kitchen and the fridge. Keep it clean. Keep it tidy. Think about what's going in there. Think about aspirational things you can live on the fridge. Leave on the fridge. Another thing, sunlight. Sunlight's really big. It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter what's going on. Sunlight. Really try to maximize the sunlight in the house. It's a huge mood booster. Darkness, a dark environment. If you're choosing an apartment, or if you blackout shades, get yourself some shears. Really, you may not notice it, but sunlight can have a huge impact on your mood. So can houseplants. I never realized this until I had an assistant who had a green thumb, and the next thing you know, I have like plant, you know, ferns flowing over the stairs and little cacti on the side of the bed. And I had a black thumb. I couldn't keep anything alive. And I began, you know, there's a little organic vegetable garden in the backyard, and it makes a huge difference. Yeah. It really does. It brings an energy to the house. If you want to talk about health benefits, obviously plants help recycle the air. They clean the air. They absorb the carbon and spit out more oxygen. But the reality is that they elevate the mood. A little bit of life in the house, especially if you can't have a pet. If you don't have a dog or you don't have a cat or what have you. Plants, they're not that hard to take care of. And they bring an energy and a life to your space. And they're quiet. They don't infringe. They don't make a mess. It's really, I would suggest getting some house plants. I personally don't like flowers because they die. That's my thing. I don't like watching anything die. So I like a plant.
Yeah.
I'm big on a plant. Plants, sunlight. And here's something else. Unplug. You know, there comes a point where the computer, the cell phone, the television, I don't love to just leave those things on. I'm not the background noise kind of a girl. Music is one thing, and that's going to be sort of my next tip. But you don't need the TV, just the chatter in the background. I think that it doesn't allow you to ever really stop and think, sit with your emotions and your thoughts, process your day. Instead, read a book. And I've read studies about sleep as well, where if you leave the TV on or if you're working on the computer before bed, which unfortunately I do sometimes, just because I have to finish my work. But that glow from the electronics, they say that it stimulates your brain. It kind of jacks you up a little bit. It doesn't allow you to relax.
Right.
And that hum of the electronic temple, turn it off at some point. Really try to ramp it down and zen and ground yourself. And then music. Music is huge on setting the tone. I love to just allow music on, whether it's depending on my mood. It could be anything from Kanye West to Mozart, you know, or flamenco. Honestly, it just depends on the mood. But music can have a dramatic impact on how you're feeling, what you're thinking, especially, you know, in particular with my workouts, obviously. Music, I don't know that I could do it without music. But music has a dramatic impact on how you're feeling and how you're thinking, and it really sets a tone. Have music on, and it could be candles. Change the lighting so that it's soft, it's bright, it's not overwhelming, it's not harsh. Get yourself, you know, don't use fluorescent lights in the house that can make you feel depressed. Get some candles, set up a little bath time area with some soaps and some salts and some scrubs or whatever, and really make an effort to allow your home to be restorative.
Wow. I got a little teary during this segment. I got a little teary because you made a really good point. So now I'm going to get a little teary now.
Oh, good.
I'm going to have a breakdown.
That's okay.
But it's very...
It's about time.
I know. oh, no. Oh, dear. But it's very true. And it's reflective of how we want to almost punish ourselves, too, by the way we keep our home in that messy state.
It's Gina's
no, but it's
Gina
true.
Gina's teary-eyed. I'll be nice to you right now.
Yeah, be nice because this could get ugly. But it's very true, you know, that there's more to...
Oh, but there's a little tear.
There's a little tear. There's more to a cluttered home. It's a huge issue.
Yeah, it really is.
It really is not. And what you're saying is incredibly valuable, because just that the home is your sanctity. But
but
there's just so much more deeper in why we do that and why we have that messy kitchen and why we keep that crap there.
Breathe.
God, I'm having a little moment right now.
But it's a reflection on also like taking time and doing something for you. Mm-hmm. And even if you have a million kids, I know there are moms out there being like, I have 3 kids and a husband. Like, you have no idea. Create a room for yourself.
Right.
Create a space for yourself. And it's just reflective of loving yourself, caring about yourself, making a statement to the world that you matter. Taking that time is really hard for people. And women in particular struggle with being selfish, it being a dirty word, but it's a big deal.
Okay, we have to take a little break because I have to just dab myself.
You're beclamped.
I'm a little beclamped.
All right.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Good.
All right. So we'll be back.
Breathe.
Yeah.
I can feel the magic floating in the air. Being with you gets me that way.
Janice really wants me to talk about fear again.
I think I've noticed in a lot of the phone calls, that you've been receiving, a lot of the emails you've gotten, they're always behind it is there's fear at the base of a lot of stuff. Mm. It just seemed, for me, that's what I've noticed.
Well, no, you're right. Obviously, fear is a huge source of paralyzation for many people. Otherwise, why would you be stuck if you're not afraid of something?
Well, fear of getting what you want or fear of losing what you've got.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, fear of getting what you want goes back to there being some sort of consequence if the goal was achieved, whether you're conscious of what that consequence is or not. So quite honestly, fear is a huge source of sabotage, whereas it can be a huge source of motivation. But it depends on your attitude and right. the techniques and tools that you employ when managing fear. And we've done a lot of fear segments, so, you know, hopefully this won't sound overwhelmingly redundant. But I think there are a lot of things that I'm bad at in this world. There really are. I'm going somewhere with this. But fear, I have become really good at managing. And a big part of that is because at a young age, I was forced to confront fear. And when you confront your fears, you deal with your fears, it stretches your emotional fabric, so to speak, so that you are less afraid the next time. You're used to that uncomfortable feeling. It's not unfamiliar. You face down a fear, and whether you succeeded or whether you failed, you survived. So it begins to build your resistance and your tolerance to engaging in something that scares you. First, though, I would like to make a clarification. And this is important. Bob and I were in New Zealand a while ago.
Yeah.
Was it last? I don't even know. Who knows? Oh, God, no. I was still on Biggest Loser. I don't know. It was a while ago.
That's when I teased you about the outfit.
The suit, yes.
Okay, so it was a while ago.
So Bob has these contestants that are jumping off of a bridge for a bungee jump, and he is agonizing over this, right? They want him to jump, and he gets to the bridge, and he looks over the edge, and he's freaking out. And they wouldn't let me be there. The producers would not let me be there with him. Who knows?
Just that's awful. I mean, you're his
scumbags,
only support.
Such scumbags. So they refused to let me be there, and I didn't have a car, so I couldn't drive. We were in New Zealand, so he's there. He's dealing with this. I'm trying to text him through my makeup artist, and he's just having the hardest time with it. He comes home to our New Zealand hotel room, and he's devastated, right? And he's just like, Jillian, nothing ever gets the better of me like this. I can't believe that I allowed this to beat me. And I looked at him and I was like, sweetie, how is jumping off of this bridge going to improve the quality of your life? How is not jumping off the bridge impeding your progress in the world? And he was like, well, it's not. And I was like, and why didn't you do it? He's like, well, first of all, it's terrifying to me. But second of all, like, I've known people that have had blood vessels burst in their eye. I knew a guy that had back problems that hurt his back doing it. He's like, I have all these concerns. And I was like, so in that case, wouldn't it make it a stupid stunt and a matter of ego versus facing down a legitimate fear that's stopping your progress in life? Mm-hmm. And he was in that moment, you know, caught up in the thought, and he was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. And he was able to walk away from it, and Bob leads a very successful life. So it's one thing if you're a daredevil and you're a thrill seeker and you find that stuff liberating, God bless. But I want to be really clear that there is a difference between facing down a fear that's a stupid stunt and facing down a fear that is impairing or impeding your ability to have a better quality of life. Being afraid to ask out the guy or girl that you have a crush on. Being afraid to open up your own business. Being afraid to join a gym when you're 400 pounds. That's the kind of fear that we're talking about today, to be clear. Not jumping off of a building. Not the same thing. Or anything of that nature. Yep. So when we look at fear, there are a couple different ways of dealing with it. The first thing is you have to have a game plan. You should never just jump at a situation to say, I'm going to beat this. I'm going to conquer this. I'm going to go for it. You should have a game plan so that you're better set up to succeed. If you're going to start your own business, you shouldn't just max out your credit cards and open up a place in your basement. Research it. Do a business plan. Learn about what tools you're going to need, what skill set the job is going to require. What's the cheapest way to finance things? Should you lease office equipment or should you buy it? You know, educate yourself. When you go into it having a little bit of knowledge, it boosts your confidence. It gives you a little bit of resilience and a little bit of peace of mind that will enable you to take that risk. Because when you're just going into something blind, of course it's going to be more scary. But when you have information, gives you a little power, gives you a little confidence, a little strength to take it on. Now, your attitude about failure is pivotal. Because a lot of times what we're fearing is failing. A lot of times. So you need to think of failure as an opportunity to learn, as an opportunity to grow, and as an opportunity to become better. But so many of us have poor self-esteem, and it's just a fact. So many of us have poor self-esteem that criticism, setbacks, failures are terrifying for us. Because in our minds, it's a validation that we weren't actually good enough. That we aren't capable of getting the job done. When somebody criticizes us, it means that we're not a good person or we're not good enough or whatever it might be. But when you have a strong sense of self, you're able to look at these things as opportunities to make yourself better. I invite now feedback. I ask people, what do you think about how I did? Janice, what do you think of the show? Janice, where could I get better? Janice, give me feedback. Janice, you know, even my business partners, my friends, what did you think about that segment that I did on the Today Show? Or how? Right. What did you think about that article that I wrote? Or even in my personal relationships, constantly, I just had a conversation with somebody that I'm dating, and it was, you know, you always try to impose your opinion on me, and back in the day, I would have gotten very defensive about that. Right. I would have been like, I do not, which of course would have been the exact same thing right. Because I didn't have a strong enough self-esteem. But now I'm able to go, gosh, I was not aware of that. Can you point that out when I'm doing it so I can become aware of it? Let me look at why I'm doing it. And I was able to process it in therapy and realize that I felt like if the person I was dating and I didn't share the same thoughts and opinions that we might grow apart. And God forbid we grow apart, right. It would mean abandonment. So I was like, you're going to think the way I think because I'm not going to feel vulnerable here. I'm not going to worry about losing you. So now I'm able to process that fear, work through those emotions, and my relationship can become that much stronger. But if I couldn't move through that fear of my own insecurities and my own insecurities of not being perfect and my own insecurities about the relationship falling apart, then the relationship ultimately would fall apart and I would bring about the thing that I fear the most. And that's what's so unique about life. You'll find that the thing you fear the most, you always manifest in trying to avoid it. So, for example, my friend is dating this girl, right? And he's so insecure and he's like, I don't make enough money and I'm going to hurt this girl. I'm going to hurt this girl. And so he's in the relationship. He's out of the relationship. He can't commit. And I was like, idiot, do you realize that all you're doing is hurting this girl by being in the relationship, out of the relationship, you know, waffling back and forth, the very thing you're afraid of and not committing to? You're afraid to commit to her because you're afraid you'll hurt her in this little game that you've engaged in here. You're hurting her more than ever. If you look at the patterns in your life of the things you're afraid of, whether you're afraid of being alone or whether you're afraid of losing weight, whether you're afraid of failing at your job, you'll find that you're creating it. You're not opening your own business. You're not asking for that promotion because you're afraid of rejection. But in not asking, in not reaching, in not trying, you've created a job situation where you're not fulfilled, which is the thing you're the most afraid of. So you need to start out by building up your confidence a little bit. So start asking people for feedback and tolerating it. Start tolerating a little criticism. Start
so hard. Because
it is hard, but when you start doing it, change your attitude and go, this is my way of getting better. This is my way of getting wiser. This is my way of getting ahead in the world. Because in getting wiser and smarter and working on these weaknesses, that's what's going to make you stronger. That's what's going to help you improve and move forward. So Start stretching that emotional fabric a little bit and ask your loved ones personally for feedback in your relationships, your kids, your spouse, your best friends. Professionally, go talk to your boss, talk to your superior. How am I doing? What do you think I can improve upon? And you'll survive. You will survive the feedback. You will survive it. You are strong enough. You'll come through it. And then in seeing that you can face down these things, it helps build that confidence. Educate yourself about the goal you're trying to pursue. That'll help mitigate the fear. Look back to times in your life when you were terrified, when you went through a hard time, when you were overwhelmed, and how you came through the other side. It might have been hard, but you survived it. You psychically survived it. You physically survived it. Also, surround yourself with supportive people that are going to be there for you and hold your hand a little bit through whatever it is that's scaring you, through whatever journey it is that you need to take, whatever fear-based thing you're trying to accomplish. Put yourself with people that love you, that support you, and that are there for you so that when you fail, you'll realize, and I say if you fail, I should say, you're still lovable. That is, 'cause that's the big thing that people are afraid of. Even if when people say, I'm afraid to succeed, well, often the reason you're afraid to succeed is because it's going to break some sort of status quo with a loved one.
Right.
And, you know, you may not be conscious of it, but you're afraid to succeed because it's going to shift the status quo. You feel like they're going to be pissed at you. They're going to abandon you. And you don't have the confidence to stand in your own truth and your reality and know that you will find people that are supportive of you, that you can set boundaries for the people that have their own issues that are unresolved, that are unconscious of their own issues because you can't control them. So as you begin to build this self-esteem, to take these small steps of facing down, start with little fears. You don't need to conquer it all at once. You don't need, it doesn't need to be something huge. Start with something small and allow yourself to stretch that emotional fabric. Feel the fear, move through the fear, do it anyway, and you'll see that you've survived. If you've succeeded, great. Now we have an experience where you've succeeded and you're going to be more inclined to face the fear. If you fail, remember the idea here is it's an opportunity to learn. How can we improve? How can we get better? We don't learn from successes. We learn from failures. Failures are where we grow. That's where we get wiser and stronger and smarter. So anyway, that's my spiel on fear today. Do you feel...
I like that. And I liked especially what you said about that at the beginning was that doing some daredevil thing is not indicative of how your life's journey.
That's not the same thing.
It's not. It's completely different.
We look at how these fears are keeping us from happiness personally or professionally. And those are whether it's enriching the quality of intimacy in our relationship or improving our professional life, pursuing our dreams in that area, whatever it might be, those are the things you need to face down. It could be fear of vulnerability. It could be anything.
Right.
But those are the things that you need to face down and deal with and try employing some of those techniques I suggested. Yeah.
Awesome.
What's next?
We're going to take some phone calls.
Oh, good.
Let's have a sangawich, though.
What?
Let's have a little sangawich break, and then we'll take some phone calls.
A snack?
A little snack.
Done.
Okay.
A company always on the run, a destiny, oh, it's the rising sun.
Okay, Rebecca is on the line for
you.
Oh,
Rebecca. Hi, Rebecca.
Hey, girl, guess what I'm doing?
What are you doing?
I'm totally pausing my, No More Trouble Zones. Let's just get into the donkey kick. But hey, I'll talk to you in real life, okay?
In the wrong company, that would have sounded very different.
I'm just getting to the donkey kicks. I was like, oh, not the donkey kicks.
I know, I would have been even more out of breath. I'm almost done with my workout.
Atta girl. I like it. Beautiful job. So I'm sorry to have interrupted your workout. No, I was just...
I will take it any day.
Calling to chat with you here. What's going on?
So my question is, okay, it is June now, almost July.
Okay.
I started my weight loss journey after I graduated from nursing school in September. And I'm really short, 4'11". I was 160, 165 pounds, and I am now 117 pounds. Woo-hoo.
Okay. Fabulous.
30-day shredded, no more trouble zones, Rebecca. However, that transformation is amazing. And I look at pictures from before, and I see that girl with that big old abdominal weight going like, holy cow, what was that? And I like the girl that I see in the mirror now, but it's so weird to, like, identify with the girl I am now. Like, who is that? It's still me. You know, I haven't changed, but socially, I think it could be like a whole experiment that you could do just on how people treat you differently and people look at you differently. And I'm sure Biggest Loser people get that a lot. It's a huge metamorphosis. So how do you deal with that?
Well, okay. First, let's start out with how are people treating you differently now, and how do you feel about it?
Well, my other question that I called in about was on depression. So I'm dealing with depression, which is a very strong chemical imbalance in my family. I have seven older sisters. Almost all of them have been on some sort of antidepressant, and my parents as well. So I have that in me. So I know that a lot of the self-confidence issue comes from that.
Not necessarily. But you could
I'm
be
going to therapy.
Okay, because I was gonna say it could definitely affect like you thinking like, oh, I'm damaged goods. Maybe it could affect you that way, but I don't think that just the chemical depression is gonna gonna be the only thing impacting your self-esteem. But okay, so you're in therapy. That's good.
I'm in therapy, and I am, like, when I look in the mirror, I like that girl, and I can see what other people see. Like, I have muscles now. I never had muscles. I have, like, rockin' arms. The parts that people see naked, they are good, okay? But I could, like, quote you on every video, every book, every podcast. But I don't know. I guess I still feel like that frumpy girl. That
okay,
girl
but wait,
really
but you still...
I don't know.
All right, but... So tell me, you still haven't answered my question, though. You answered all the way around it. How are you being? How are they treating you differently, and how do you feel about it?
I think I just, if anything, get more attention. I'm married.
Okay.
I've been happily married for 13 years. Some people have been going around, like, in our neighborhood, and even my husband's coworkers, and saying, like, your wife's going to leave you. That's why she's losing all this weight. My ex-wife is really hot, too, and all this stuff. And I'm like, what? Because I'm getting healthy? Like, that's ridiculous. There's no problem.
Okay, so it's invited meddling into your life. All right, and that's annoying. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess people give me the comments, too, like if I ever eat something that they think I wouldn't eat. Like I eat a piece of pizza at a birthday party or something, and they're like, oh, you're eating pizza? And I'm like, yeah, I just ran 7 miles. I think I can eat it. Like,
yeah. And okay, so how does that make you feel, though?
How does it make me feel? I don't know.
When people meddle, when they get involved, now they're paying attention and they're passing judgment.
Right.
More so, seemingly, than they did before. They kept their opinions to themselves. And that's triggering you how?
I think it pisses me off, really.
Why?
Well, for one, like, for the marriage comments, when's the last time you hung out with me and my husband and saw how great we are?
But why is it pissing you off?
You know, because I don't want anyone to have that opinion, I guess.
Who cares?
And their opinions didn't really matter.
No, that's the thing, is that their opinions don't matter. So if your husband, if you are reaffirming your love for him and your relationship is rock solid, it's not going to matter what people say. There's a reason this is bothering you. It's triggering something. Otherwise, it wouldn't. You know, and then when people go like, are you sure you really want that pizza? Like, who cares? They're not even talking to you. They're projecting their own insecurities. It has nothing to do with you. And you could just very politely say, like, I appreciate your concern, but I would really also like it if you kept it to yourself in the future. I'm doing really good, and I don't require your help. But thank you. You set boundaries, you move on, and you recognize that it's not about you. It should be that simple, but it's not. So now this has invited people to sort of start paying attention to what you're doing and meddling in your life. And you've become seemingly more of a spotlight, so to speak, for them to kind of notice and comment on. So my question is, why is that bothering you? And the only reason it matters is because if it bothers you, is it possible that it would ever push you back in old directions because it became too uncomfortable or triggered you too much in a negative way?
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't. One of the things that we are talking about in therapy is she's trying to get through the depression and get to me, but why don't I like me? And I have done, like I can tell you, phenomenal things, but it doesn't matter. I still don't really like me. other people do sometimes, I guess.
Okay. Honey, these are two separate conversations. And I think what you're looking for is you're hoping that losing this weight and making these changes would allow you to finally like yourself. And yet you're still looking at this going, well, I'm skinny, I'm fit, I have muscles, and I still don't like myself. So how can I begin to go, oh my God, I'm skinny, it's time to like me now. But right. what you're not really acknowledging is that one thing really doesn't have anything to do with the other. The weight was a symptom of, probably partially a symptom of self-worth issues. And you dealt with the symptom, but not the root of the problem. It's just like if you go into, oh, I'm not losing weight because I have intimacy issues. And then you go and you lose weight, but you haven't dealt with your intimacy issues. You're still not going to attract a relationship because you're still going to have intimacy issues. So it doesn't matter. You didn't hate yourself because you were overweight. You were neglecting your health because you had self-esteem issues to begin with. Does that make any sense?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I guess I just thought this was like, I mean, a huge accomplishment.
It is.
Look at, you know, before and after, like, look at all this that I've done. So I was trying to prove to myself maybe, like, look, you did one more cool thing. You're good.
And?
But
how's it working out for you?
Not really.
Well, it should. Here's what it should do. It should help. It should be a part of it. I mean, it allows you to make a dent, to have evidence, to experience a reality where your success is possible. Your value is illustrated. It's definitely a push in the right direction. Okay. I mean, you do feel better when you look in the mirror. I mean, are you looking in the mirror going, oh, my God, I have muscles? Or are you looking in the mirror going, oh, my God, I want to throw a rock into this thing?
No, I'm like, wow.
Okay, so it's helping, but if you think it's a cure-all or a panacea, that's where you're sorely mistaken.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm not your therapist, I don't know your background, but, you know, come on, I mean, I'm not an idiot. You have 7 sisters. Your parents, you told me, suffer from depression. The sisters uh-huh. suffer from depression. Right off the bat, I would imagine that as a child who's growing up in a home with 7 other kids, it would be difficult to stand out and difficult to get...
And I'm the youngest.
Okay. I mean, probably difficult to get the attention with 7 other kids having, you know, their stuff going on in the household. So right away, on some level, you've got to feel like, and it's not about blaming anybody. It just, it may right. be what it may be, that your needs aren't necessarily getting met or you're not being paid attention to. And then you're telling me that your parents struggled with depression. So, I mean, I can read into that a million different ways of growing up with parents who are unhappy, growing up with parents who may not be completely present, growing up with parents who may not be fully engaged because depression can be severely debilitating. As a child, if your parents are unhappy or not fully engaged or going through God knows what comes along with severe depression, I would interpret that unconsciously as a kid is I'm not enough to turn them around. I'm not enough to engage them. I'm not enough to make them happy. And that there could be a host of other incidents in your past that have contributed to this scenario. So if you think I'm skinny now, why am I not happy? Really? Did that just resolve all of your parents' issues and all of your childhood issues because you've got biceps?
They're really good biceps.
I hear you, honey. And I am glad. And you know, you might even have, like, you know, like I say, an ass you can bounce a quarter off of. But nevertheless, it's not going to go back into your childhood and go, oh, my God, if I had bicep muscles, my mommy would have been happy. No.
Right.
No. So, you know, what you're contending with, I guarantee you, is old childhood stuff that you unconsciously interpreted to mean there was a lack of worth there. And again, I'm not your therapist. I don't know the details, but that's where your work is going to lie. Now, where this new story of the fit you, the strong you, the empowered you, where that can be helpful is that you're not adding insult to injury. You're not pushing this in a worse direction. Think of it like this. If you've got a wound, right? Like if you've cut yourself, and we'll call that your childhood, you've got it. You've got a wound. You're seeking to heal it. Well, to continue to allow yourself to be unhealthy and overweight is allowing that wound to get infected. Mm-hmm. And it will become worse. So now you're treating it, you're caring for it, you're managing the symptoms so they don't get worse, they don't get out of control. You're creating an environment for that wound to heal. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
And you are able to, over time, buy into it's going to also, this new fit you, is also going to allow you to feel strong enough in some ways down the road to deal with the painful things in your childhood that you may not be yet able to acknowledge. You know, we go into denial about things because they suck.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot easier for you to think, I'm depressed and I hate myself because I'm fat, instead of going, wow, you know, I'm depressed and I have self-worth issues because my childhood was X, Y, and Z. That's a lot harder to look at. Then you got to deal with being disappointed at your parents, maybe mad at your parents, hurt, all those things that no one wants to look at, no one wants to feel, no one wants to deal with. But the stronger you become physically, the more resilient you begin to feel emotionally, so that you are going to be able to look at the deeper issues and the deeper root of things. But that's where the look in the mirror, love yourself moment is going to come from. When you're able to go back, look at where this stuff comes from, give it back to your parents, give it back to your childhood, recognize that it was never about you and never about your shortcomings, and start to really own your true power and your true strength, and give those issues back to the people that projected them onto you. Or accept those experiences, that whatever they may have been, for what they were, and realize that it's not your fault and it had nothing to do with your value. That's when a true transformation is going to occur on a deeper level. This is you priming the pump. This is you building up strength. This is you preparing for battle, these physical changes. Now you got to do the deeper work.
Okay.
All right, but you're doing really well. You are. You're in therapy, which means you're willing to work on it. You're making progress. Your health is superb. This is all fabulous stuff. This stuff doesn't get resolved. This is a lifetime's worth of work. Trust me.
Trust her.
Dear God. Yeah. It's like a friggin' onion. Every time you're like, oh my God, there's more shit. Oops. There's more stuff here for me. So, you know.
I know. Yesterday when I went to my appointment, I just walked in. I didn't even want to, like, unpeel a layer. And so I looked at my therapist and I was like, so let's talk about you today. How are you?
Yeah.
Not a girl.
But like, if your therapist was good, they will redirect you though. So. I'm hoping that happened. I never get away with that. Anyway. All right, buddy. Hang in there. You're doing all the right stuff.
I'm going to go donkey kick some butt.
Atta girl.
Yeah, I want to take a bite of your bicep. That's what I want to do.
Oh, Jane, it's inappropriate.
I'll send you pictures on Facebook, dude. They're amazing, and it's I'm not going to say all because of you, because I know you'll give me crap. I did all the work, but I was doing it with you the whole time.
No, you utilized information that I put in the world to make a change in your life. It was your choice.
Well, and
it was
you
your
are
actions.
Such an amazing source, and you have that, I don't know, power that, you know, like, you're not going to take crap from anyone, but, I don't know.
Except Janice.
Yeah, I give her crap
awesome.
All the time,
Rebecca. Janice and Brute.
Thank you, buddy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have an awesome day. I'm so glad I got to talk to you.
You too.
All right. Bye.
We got to go.
Again?
We got to go. I know.
You do this every show. You just rip the cord.
No, I know. It was a full show.
Every time.
We can only do so much in a time. Then we have to close the show. And Dr. V's coming on next week.
Oh, that's right. Dr. Van Hurley with her top seven.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Me too.
All right. Well, then, goodbye. Peace.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.